And when we get into the personal journey of know thyself, call it the heroine's journey, it's the most courageous and challenging work that you'll ever do. And in the conditions that we work and how it is that we live and lead our lives today is we're at such a fast pace. How do we get the opportunity or even the space to lead?
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters. You know, people exactly like you. Your business, body balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. So how many of you have thought of mindfulness, yoga, meditation, all those core buzzwords as not just acts of relaxation, but in fact, acts of leadership? This is the stance of my guest on today's episode, Paula Pine. Paula is a consultant in the mindfulness space, and her stance on the matter is that all of these elements, these things that cause us to focus on ourselves and who we are and to slow down, are not just tools that help to accelerate the success of teams and new startups, but they are in fact acts of personal leadership that all of us as leaders within our communities or our clinics or our offices or our homes, in fact, have a responsibility to try and engage with ourselves. I thoroughly enjoyed this interview with Paula because it took an entirely new position on this notion of mindfulness. And that is no longer that it is something that other people do, those people with that unique skill of calming their minds down. But in fact, it is a responsibility of all of us to look at mindfulness practices and find innovative ways of incorporating them into our day. Paula took me through a 5-minute mindfulness meditation and guided imagery session at the end of this podcast, which you are totally invited to do yourself unless you are driving. But it speaks to her capacity to take people to this place and challenge them on a level they maybe have not been challenged on before. If you are that person who rolls your eyes at yoga, who thinks of exercise as only things that have your heart rate above 140 and really are challenged to slow down, then this is an interview for you. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Paula Pine. Paula Pine, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Oh, thank you, Megan. It's so great to be here.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you. You are a mindful leadership coach. And the first time I read that, I was like, oh, this woman and I need to speak. I love the sound of it. What is a leadership coach exactly? And tell us a little bit about the journey that got you to this place.
Sure. Well, I define a leadership coach as very much partnership. So it's a partnership that's informed by a foundation of trust and really it's a co-creation of identifying with clients what it is that's really deeply meaningful for them, in the sense that there's something that has held them back for over time. And it's a pattern or a theme that has presented itself from keeping them stuck and or realizing success. So I work in a method and theory that's based off of integral theory. And Yeah. So a lot of my leadership clients come with issues around just trying to do things in a new way, because the way it is that they're leading and living their lives is causing distress.
So what happened in your life journey that got you to this place?
Well, it's kind of a long and windy road, but I'll make it short and sweet. I have a combination of, I have quite a diverse background, from social work to corporate business to entrepreneurship. So, and then my training is in a combination of the humanities. So undergrad in psychology, human resources management, postgrad. And then I went on to continue my education in business and did my MBA in executive management. And then had about 10 years in corporate, working in the front lines all the way up through to manager and leadership positions. So it's this combination of professional experience and as well as credential training. But the majority of that is really based on my own life experience of moving through mindfully positive change and figuring out how to do that.
The life experience piece is just so critical. You mentioned something in the introduction there. You said that your leadership style and your coaching style is based on integral theory. And I found that really interesting and yet had absolutely no idea what you were talking about. What does that mean?
Well, it means that we're taking into account the whole person. And it's based on the work of Ken Wilber has written a lot about integral theory, of course. And he's one of the greatest philosophers of our time. And so it's really taking into consideration the whole person and then mixing it up with work in human development that helps us to see things from this integrated whole body perspective, helps us to realize our current ways in that we can bring things that are in our subjective into an objective view. So then we're able to see things from discernment and in ways that we haven't seen them. So we can distance ourselves from the actual thing that is the barrier for us to transcend and evolve into a new way. So at this time, this is why the work is so important, Megan, is that we are so desperate in need of a new way. And it begins with you, it begins with me in trying to figure this out.
I have thoughts on, I find the topic of leadership so exciting, which is why I was really excited that we got connected. And on two levels, I talk to my patients a lot about this idea of personal leadership. And yes, that their health is an element of personal leadership. And they usually look at me like, huh? But I agree with you, and I feel like this is maybe where you were going, but correct me if I'm wrong, that there's also a collective consciousness that is desperate for sincere leadership, not the loudest and most bullying voice in the room. So assuming that this, are we on the same page? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, so here's the thing, is that leadership is the current leadership that we see in terms of how it is that we've learned and how it is that we've seen leadership unfold in the last, you know, number of decades is very past due. And so that's why I think that we see this collective, what we see in the collective is a pushback around, wait a minute, this is not working anymore. And we need to find ways to renew and create a new leadership paradigm that's based on heart-centered, people-first approach. Personal leadership piece is fundamental to the growth in our current leadership paradigm. So you can't have just one without the other, if that makes sense. So part of that personal leadership journey is to back to ancient old wisdom that has always professed that it's to know thyself. And when we get into the work, the personal journey of know thyself, call it the heroine's journey, it's the most courageous and challenging work that you'll ever do. And in the conditions that we work and how it is that we live and lead our lives today is we're at such a fast pace. And how do we get the opportunity or even the space to lead in that way that's being so collectively called for?
Do you think that we are all born with the capacity to be leaders, or do you feel that there is a skill set or intuitive capacity that positions people to be, I don't want to say better leaders than others, but more natural leaders than others?
Yeah. I think the most natural leaders, and I think it depends, but I think these traits and themes that show up in inspirational and great leaders, I think we all have access to that. And what that is being able to access the pure essence of our hearts. There's so much power in that. And I think of inspirational leaders like, for example, Oprah is a great example of that. That courage and honesty and leading the way of heart and intuition and on. So the themes are not only accessing the heart, but also this whole body, mind, body, soul that we have available to us that we're just not accessing for a variety of reasons.
And what seems so clear with her is that she has done the work herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not something, I don't think it's something that you can fake when you are a heart-centered leader. There's an essence of authenticity that is on the surface of your leadership style that's hard to fake.
Yeah, that's right. And what's being called for in the shift and in the collective is that we investigate those ways in order to access these resources that are so innate in us. Like we all have it. We all access your own inner leader. Let's just call it that. But is everybody designed to lead a $1 billion company? Not in today's setup. And I think the traditional hierarchy of leadership is slowly dying. And we're moving to a more collaborative approach to innovation and solving problems.
Yeah, I agree. You know, at first I wanted to say to you, if you had the opportunity to work with the current administrative complement of a country to our immediate south, what advice would you want to give them? But then I want to reframe it from that, because sometimes I feel like you just have to pick your battles. So instead, what I want to ask you is, if we are living in an era where, unbeknownst to all of us, this a style of leadership that is focused on bullying and posturing of power is taking hold, what do we need to tap into efficiently as individual leaders with a capacity to step up to combat that way of thinking?
I think it requires, Megan, a really strong discipline. And what I mean by discipline, it actually means being a disciple. You know, the literal meaning of it is being faithful unto oneself. So when we're disciples unto ourselves, we honor our own rhythm. So it's really to ground in to our own rhythm and attune to what's most meaningful and what matters most to staying true to not only our heart, but our values. So the bullying, we can effectively and efficiently stand up to that because we're able to stand in our power. And I think we're seeing that collectively across the globe, that women are rising and our voices are being heard more than ever before. And, you know, with the hashtag Time's Up, it is indeed a Time's Up. if that makes sense.
It totally makes sense. And what I love about this movement, which I feel like is happening rapidly around us and unfolding in a almost in a moment by moment basis, is that this new style of leadership is one that honors who we truly are as women and doesn't challenge us or demand that we step into a male paradigm in order to be successful.
That's right.
And that feels so different and so authentic. You know, I have some patients in my practice, and they feel so strongly that for them to be successful in a male-dominated industry, they have to go so far as to take the birth control pill on an uninterrupted manner so they never menstruate. Because they're like, I cannot afford any fluctuation in emotion or any distraction if I'm going to compete in that world. And it has always felt so sad and disservicing to me that they felt that that was the only way they could offer their leadership. But I feel like the platform for that is shifting. What do we need to do as women to step into that? Because I think that there's a different skill set that's required than we've ever faced before.
Yeah, definitely a different skill set. And it begins with boldly saying no. As a starting point, because it's detrimental to oneself first and foremost, but it's also detrimental to evolving and transcending to this next level in our human evolution. So I think it begins by boldly saying no. What it takes is an enormous amount, though, and I really want to honor and recognize this, Megan. It takes an enormous amount to step outside of that vicious circle, because we don't see what we don't see. And with that, like, if we're to say no and stop, that takes a tremendous amount of courage. And then, so I just want to honor that in this moment. And I think it also takes the courage of being able to take a look in the mirror at yourself and make change.
So how do we do that? How do we tap into that courage? Because I feel like so many people have this feeling, and I get this feeling too, where it's just like swirling inside them, this desire to take action. And yet they're like, but I'm scared to do it. I'm scared what people might think. I'm scared about how this might not go. As someone who tangibly coaches people, how do we go from that? I'm almost there, but I just can't do it.
Yeah. Well, from a leadership coaching point of view, and the work that I've done with others, is that it takes time and patience. So although we want to put it out there and we might be really excited about it, is that there's a time and a season, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Like, I've, in a good example of this, and I get it, I so get it, is that what's contained inside of us, in that authenticity and what lies really at the heart of what's most meaningful for us, holds a back seat. And to bring it to the forefront, it takes a lot of time. And sometimes we need to let ideas go and allow them to percolate, call it. And if they're really meant to be, they come back. I just had an example of that in my own personal and professional life.
Where it boomeranged back?
And then my husband said, well, Paula, it never left you. I often, when I'm working with clients, I also teach. And it's just, you know, it's this place of being held in a community. So, you know, a community of care that continuously reminds you that to work on what is deeply meaningful and what matters most. And when we're surrounded in that community of care, we can move past what feels like a barrier that is the result of fear. And Megan, in the collective too, we're moving from, fear, anxiety, and all those not so nice vibes. And we're really shifting into a place of doing things from unconditional love. So that's a process of unfolding. So, you know, we're meant to not push. We're meant to really discover, you know, as we get to know ourselves and remember who we are, it's really getting to know our own rhythm.
It's such a good point, because I feel like for a lot of these things, there's always an urgency to it, right? There's a rush.
And you know why? I think there's an urgency and a rush because I think as women especially, we're always questioning, and what comes into question is, I'm not good enough. I'm questioning my self-worth, and I'm in the state of comparison. So that, again, we're moving, those are old paradigms, and we're beginning to welcome in this unfolding a new, more natural way that is, you can suggest it's a divine feminine. So underlining the heart of it. And that's really powerful when we access that and balance out these energies of masculine and feminine that are so needed.
And in a world that moves so quickly, so a lot of us have businesses where we have people who work within our businesses, and part of our success requires that we can turn on a dime, and that we build teams up to have the confidence to be able to respond to opportunities or to situations quickly. How do we foster the leadership skills for these individuals to be judicious decision makers, but at the same time create an environment that is sufficiently patient that they come into their own fruition as leaders? Because as someone who owns a business, I'm listening to what you're saying, I'm like, okay, I get it. How do I manage those two pieces? Because that is a challenge to me as a leader, is creating an environment that respects patience, but then is also amply competitive in the reality of my world.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what is unfolding as we speak in terms of the shifts that we will be required to make, because we have to do things differently. And that requires us as leaders, Megan, to lead by example. So we set the tone, and we need to do that by accessing mindfulness, empathy, compassion, patience, resilience, and all of those need to be honored by a rhythm. And the rhythm that we clip to at the rate that we do because of competition has to go. I know that sounds probably really bold. You know, how do we make that transition is in a conversation in and of itself. And I'm really, really interested in having these more of these conversations because I think what's taken a back seat is the true value of well-being and success at all cost. So that is a dialogue that we need to continue. And to figure out collectively, Megan, how do we rewrite this script in the sense of coming together to create new ways? Because I don't have the answers, but I think if we come to get together as a collective and continue this dialogue to place greater emphasis on leadership well-being and success in terms of redefining and the value that we place on leadership well-being, we can have significant change over time. Like, let's plant the seeds.
And it's a seed planting, because this is not a recommendation that is going to facilitate overnight success. But in my experience, overnight success really takes 10 to 15 years. So I'm down with that. You know, I'll share a story. Recently, we're in the process of planning a live event, and we had set a date for that to happen in May. And for a variety of reasons, I believe that was the best time to do it. And yet we kept encountering challenges with that in a tangible way, but also in a universal type way. And eventually we just pushed it. Like, we consciously decided as a team, we are like, we are rushing into this. There is no real reason to place it where we've placed it. We've moved it to the fall. And the second we made that shift and that change, everyone breathed a sigh of relief. Everyone started to do better work. No one felt this pressure anymore. And we are going to have a better event as a result, but it really required that we step back and everybody had to move into a personal and professional leadership position to really accept it and make the change. And it's going to make a huge impact for us.
And what a beautiful example. That's amazing.
Yeah, but it was hard.
Yes, it is hard because and it's really uncomfortable because you're stepping into relying on a couple of things. Divine timing, and that's outside of our control, trust, faith, and intuition. But those are really fundamental and foundational skill sets that we can cultivate and learn over time that's required for this new leadership that we're talking about.
Yeah. And it's funny for me personally, like there was a phase in my life where I would love for my legacy to have been, I was the youngest person to have completed fill in the blank. And now I'm a bit appalled by that way of thinking. And I'm much more attuned to this notion of, I want to be known for a person who facilitated an environment that enabled women to flourish and be healthy in the process and then build really amazing things. And the two are not, the two are just different, but they're certainly coming from an evolved place of thinking. So I love what you're saying, because I totally get it, but it takes a level of maturity and patience to come to that place too.
Yes. And that's bang on.
What would you say to that young, bold, ambitious individual who's coming out of university or coming out of grad school, is like, I'm about to take the world by storm, and yet they also need to do some leadership development at the same time? I mean, the obvious one is to slow down, but they've got to feel it if they're really going to slow down. What would you do to interrupt that way of thinking or challenge that way of thinking for them?
Well, what first came to mind there, Megan, is gentleness and kindness. And I often think about the pressure and the competition and the comparison that's coming out, especially for women, just fresh out of university. And that is terribly terrifying and daunting at the same time. And I work with a few clients in that age category as well. And I teach self-care at Laurier University in the positive psychology program. So I get a few younger students in that mix. And the best thing that they're doing is self-care. And what they're learning is that the more that I take care of myself in gentle and kind ways, I can be gentler and kinder on others.
Yeah, it's so true. Tell us a little bit more about working in a department and discipline of positive psychology, and what are you teaching in terms of self-care?
Oh, it's amazing. I love positive psychology. It came into my life before I think it was named positive psychology, because it's a fairly new discipline. I read a book that changed my life, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, by Susan Jeffer. And she was sort of a positive guru back in the day. And so to come around full circle and be part of the faculty teaching in the positive psychology program is it like a dream come true? And over the last decade, it's a culmination of my work and what it is that I've been practicing and committed to in terms of doing my own self-care. So what is it? It's taking the positive psychology as the study of human flourishing, and to use that as a gateway into self-care across the spectrum of psychological well-being, physical well-being, and social and spiritual well-being. So, what's foundational to the teaching in this course is mindfulness and self-compassion, and along with nurturing a community of care. Yeah, in the learning. It's amazing, Megan. Like the students that come together in this community are so authentic, you know, speaking truth, and then they're taking the method and the theory, and they're taking it out into the world. So they're willing to lead by example, and they're taking these ideas and into their workplace. And yeah, it's amazing.
The psychology of human flourishing. I love that.
Yeah, I'm kind of a, you know, I've been a self-help but sort of junkie over the, well, I mean, it spans a few decades now, but it's a, yeah, I thrive in that space of human development.
I find this interesting, and I'm not sure if it is a crossroads or there's a complementarity, and I'm interested in your thought on it. But if we look at the psychology of human flourishing, and then we look at self-care and we look at mindfulness, at the same time, you know, one of the things that we focus on is how do we achieve health optimization, helping so much more than just your physical body. But one of the areas that we talk about is this notion of biohacking. Are there things that we can understand uniquely about ourselves that help to move us to an optimal state of living? Do you view these two concepts as being in opposition to one another or having some element of complementarity?
Oh, they're very much complementary.
Good. I was worried there for a second.
No.
What is mindfulness? Like, we hear it all the time. We use this terminology all the day. How would you define it?
It's in its simplicity, and in practice, it's not so simple. I had one of my mindfulness teachers say the hardest part of about mindfulness is remembering. So it's really based on a noticing, and it's a noticing of paying attention on purpose, just the way things are. So we're not judging it. We're just accepting things in that moment, just the way it is, across all that comes into our awareness. So that's from physical sensations to thoughts through to sounds. And so it's our direct experience, and we have a relationship to that which is coming into our life by moment. So are we awake and aware to that which comes into our, you know, consciousness? Are we conscious, or are we asleep at the wheel? So, yeah, so mindfulness has come in, you know, to business, and it's been certainly trending, and it's a great skill. It's a skill to focus our attention, but also it's a gateway into self-awareness and creating the foundation to really get to know ourselves.
Do you have an opening exercise that you like to give groups when you're workshopping people around an introduction to mindfulness? Because I feel like it is such a great gateway to meditation and an exploration of all of these things. But I would imagine there's some really great beginner steps that people could start with.
Absolutely. And it's as simple as finding a comfortable seat. So if you want to do this alongside, if that makes sense.
I'm doing it. I'm in.
Cool. Okay. So finding a comfortable seat, placing both feet on the floor, and just for a moment, rest your attention on the soles of your feet. Noticing any sensations in the soles of the feet. So they may be tingly, cold, whirling with energy. And then just take a moment to scan the lower body, right up through to your seat. So your buttocks. And just noticing your bum in the seat. And then from here, just noticing the spine. Is it straight? Relaxed? And so just taking a moment to lengthen up through the spine, with the neck's relaxed but growing taller. And just relaxing the jaw right up through to noticing the crown of the head. And you may want to close the eyes, just softening the eyes. You can place your gaze down to the floor or just gently close your eyes. So as we close the eyes, it's that internal note to gaze inside for the next couple of moments. And from here, we'll just simply notice the breath. So as thoughts come in, as they often do, just note the thought and gently guide yourself to come back to the breath. So from here, just taking a conscious deep inhale, following the in-breath all the way through, following the out-breath all the way through. And you can even repeat this silently to yourself. I follow the in-breath all the way through. I follow the out-breath all the way through. So with each inhale, the spine's growing a little bit taller. And with each exhale, the spine is relaxed, the body's relaxed. So continuing a couple of breaths in this way. As you gently focus your attention on the breath. And then just allowing that to go and notice just the natural rise and fall of the breath in the body. And as we meet the breath, it's like, hello, there you are. Welcome. And then perhaps resting a soft attention on your heart, and in this moment, in this present moment, where the body's relaxed and calm, silently asking your heart, in this moment, what is my heart yearning for? What do I need? And just listen, allowing words to blossom. Whatever arises. Just noting without following the storyline, just accepting what it is. And then just allowing it to go and eventually coming back to awaken to a new perspective, possibly. Or a refreshed energy. And so as we finish up the practice, I always offer gratitude for the teaching, and I offer a breath of a practice to somebody who needs it most in my life or out into the world. How do you feel, Megan?
I feel amazing.
That was nice.
It was great. I actually just enjoyed that space being there. And I love that in the same conversation of stepping into leadership, we also can go, which can be intense and hot and all those things, we could go to this quiet, still place that actually enables you to accelerate where you want to go.
Yes. Yeah. And the accelerated place that you want to go is finding and discovering your own rhythm,
which
is very different than the accelerated pace that we find ourselves in today.
We think we don't have time for a break, but when you take it, everything actually speeds up in terms of progress.
Yeah, that's right. And what's interesting is that the more that we integrate it and it becomes a habit, it just naturally becomes a way of being and living and leading. So that's the goal of the work that I do, is that eventually this is just a way of life, as it's become my way of life.
I love it. habits, practice. It integrates seamlessly. Yes, and it takes discipline, absolutely.
But the discipline in the true sense of being a disciple unto oneself, and when we're honoring our own rhythms, which is very different from the definition that we tend to think that discipline is. Like, discipline can, oh God, that sounds scary, or it sounds like it's in a box.
No, I like this. I like this. This version of discipline is about listening, and it's about learning, and it's about acceptance. It is not about willing yourself forward, and the energy is totally different. I appreciate you bringing that those differences to the table. Paula, how would you define health?
How would I define health? Can I just pause for a moment, Megan? Because I'm curious. I'm curious as to what came up in your heart.
What came up in my heart?
When we sat in some quiet space. And it's okay if anything didn't arise, that's okay too.
Yeah, and I think for me it was like a feeling. I find when I do these things, I see lots of colors, but there was a clarity and calmness to it. And the clarity and calmness were like very distinctly white and blue.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Like, it was legitimately, yeah, it is that clarity and calmness and that permission to stop.
Yeah. Wow. That's powerful.
Yeah. I really felt that. And it's, yeah. Thank you for asking. That's great.
Megan, just as an aside, I think we need to do more of this.
Yes, I agree with you.
We're going to be talking more, you know.
I know. I can't wait. I feel that. I totally feel that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not letting you off the hook. Paula, how would you define health?
Health. To me, health is a state of wholeness. So mind, body, soul, and that wholeness is how it shows up for you in the sense of in its deeper context. It's integrated.
Yes. Integrated is such a good word.
It's also not only integrated, it's dynamic. So, and that I mean, there are so many moving parts to health, and some things may be online, where other things may not be online, and that doesn't mean that you're not still whole, if that makes sense.
It makes sense to me, especially when we're viewing health through the lens and bodies and people as these systems and not these independent silos. This idea of dynamic and integrated totally, totally resonates. Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. When you know better, you can do better. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to meganwalker.com/Anthropology quiz. I think this is a really great part to transition to the final part of the interview, which is what I call our KPIs or key performance indicators. So just like we would have these in our businesses, I believe that we have them with respect to our lives as well. Like, the details of how we live and what we read and what we do, I think speak so much. So if you'll indulge me, I've got 6 rapid fire but totally intentional questions for you.
Got to turn on the intuition here, Megan.
Just feel it. Just flow. Nothing's hard. Paula, do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share it?
Yes, I do. It's consistent daily reflection over a pot of morning tea and meditation. And I also do writing practice in the morning as well. So that's pretty consistent. I'm a very slow person to start the day. And that's my sacred time. So it's more of a ritual.
I like that. Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
Always nonfiction. I need to read more fiction, but I love nonfiction. I love hearing about people and what they're about. What am I reading now? I've got a bunch of books on my nightstand, and I find that the reading that I'm doing is the reading on myself.
What is the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Time alone and quiet. Yeah, quiet time is pretty consistent.
What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. You didn't see that coming, did you?
No, I didn't. Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. Friday night dance party in my living room. I don't know.
That's pretty awesome. I love that.
Yeah, when nobody's, you know, it's when nobody's looking and kind of blast up the tunes and it could, the badass is probably GNR.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you do for fun or play besides your Friday night dance parties?
I love to play in nature.
And one last question for you. Entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Both. Is that okay?
That is fine. I love it. And no one is left out. It's actually one of my most favorite questions to ask because I get answers across the board, which means everyone everywhere is going to be satisfied at some point.
Yeah.
It's great.
I have a reason for that though.
Go for it.
You know, somebody, I was asked a potent question. What were you like before the age of 5? So oftentimes I'll ask my clients that as a coaching question. And so when I went back, well, I didn't really remember what I was like before the age of 5, but I went back and talked to my mom and she said, well, Paula, you were the type of person that made up your own play, games, and you went to the beat of your own drum. And I thought, oh, wow. Like I never thought that I would be in the space of entrepreneurship. And here I am. And I very much had to learn those skills. So it's like, that's why I say it's a bit of both.
Yeah. And that's the truth, right? Is it usually, it's never really black or white.
No.
I really appreciate you sharing all of your wisdom, Paula. I love that we went through this mindfulness exercise. If people want to follow up, where can they learn more about what you're up to?
Well, they can find me on upliftconsulting.com. And I'm active in social media, so my handle's at Paula Pine, and then on Facebook.
Brilliant. And we'll hook everyone up with these resources and capacity to access you in our show notes. Paula, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Megan. So wonderful to talk to you about this. It's so important work.
Absolutely. Well, have a great day.
Yes, you too. Thank you.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.